Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Danielle Ward.
All right.
And this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello there.
How are we all this week? It's very muggy, isn't it?
It's very muggy.
Yeah.
I'm quite somber this week.
Right.
How come?
Because of the weather mainly.
Mm.
Don't you like muggy weather?
Not really. It makes me feel quite somber. And I thought it might add a new sort of different tone to the podcast. Like a backstory.
I like it. I like the weather like this. But I...
Why do you like it?
A melancholy person.
Because there's about to be a storm.
I love that.
Just like in all films.
Just like in the front of my pants.
There's nothing better than writing during a storm.
Or doing anything during, or being in bed during a storm.
Trying to bring a Frankenstein monster to life during a storm. There's no better time.
Or birthing a new calf.
Except when I'm playing golf, maybe it's quite bad during a storm.
Not if you're really trying to get to the end of your training montage.
Or sailing, or being on a cross-channel ferry. There are a couple of things.
Yeah, I guess. Well, listeners, those are things not to do in a storm. We've been to the cinema this week. Now, who's been to see what?
Lots of people went to see lots of different films. That's the beauty of cinema.
It is.
Do you want to talk about your film first?
Sure. I went to see Behind the Candelabra.
Ooh.
Oh, yes. Which is about the life of Liberace. Well, it's a specific chunk of the life of Liberace. As in the relationship he had with a young man by the name of Scott. Liberace is played in this film by Michael Douglas, and young...
Famously not gay, as we all know.
Famously not gay, Michael Douglas.
He's got cancer.
And his lover... there's some beautiful mimes being done in this room right now. His lover is played by the famously not gay Matt Damon.
There are loads of famously not gay people.
His teen lover is played by 43-year-old Matt Damon.
Matt Damon's 43?
Yeah.
Wow. He is looking all right.
And it's a Steven Soderbergh movie, I should say. We've talked about his films before in context of Haywire, I believe, is the most recent one we talked about. But
wasn't it that one with... the one with Catherine Zeta-Jones as the sleep doctor?
And Channing Tatum.
Oh, was that... That was Soderbergh as well. Yeah. We've talked about a lot of Soderbergh.
I thought that was going to be his last film. He's done this one rather quickly.
He said this is his last film, and it was made for telly, but it got a cinema release over here.
Oh, because HBO made it.
Yes, HBO made it because, in the words of the press release, Hollywood said it was too gay. Even though he made Magic Mike, which is... It's not gay, but it's, you know, homoerotic, I guess.
Anything... with a man on it, that can give another, that can engorge another man. I keep on thinking about that. Our listener who's like 11 years old, before I say anything now, and I realise this at the start of this.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Danielle Ward.
All right.
And this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello there.
How are we all this week? It's very muggy, isn't it?
It's very muggy.
Yeah.
I'm quite somber this week.
Right.
How come?
Because of the weather mainly.
Mm.
Don't you like muggy weather?
Not really. It makes me feel quite somber. And I thought it might add a new sort of different tone to the podcast. Like a backstory.
I like it. I like the weather like this. But
why do you like it?
A melancholy person.
Because there's about to be a storm.
I love that.
Just like in all films.
Just like in the front of my pants.
There's nothing better than writing during a storm.
Or doing anything during, or being in bed during a storm.
Trying to bring a Frankenstein monster to life during a storm. There's no better time.
Or birthing a new calf.
Except when playing golf, maybe, is quite bad during a storm.
Not if you're really trying to get to the end of your training montage.
Or sailing, or being on a cross-channel ferry. There are a couple of things.
Yeah, I guess. Well, listeners, those are things not to do in a storm. We've been to the cinema this week. Now, who's been to see what?
Lots of people went to see lots of different films. That's the beauty of cinema.
It is.
Do you want to talk about your film first?
Sure. I went to see Behind the Candelabra. Which is about the life of Liberace. Well, it's a specific chunk of the life of Liberace, as in the relationship he had with a young man by the name of Scott. Liberace is played in this film by Michael Douglas, and young,
famously not gay, as we all know,
famously not gay Michael Douglas.
He's got cancer,
and his lover. There's some beautiful mimes being done in this room right now. His lover is played by the famously not gay Matt Damon.
There are loads of famously not gay.
His teen lover is played by 43-year-old Matt Damon.
Matt Damon's 43?
Yeah.
Wow. He is looking all right.
And it's a Steven Soderbergh movie, I should say. We've talked about his films before in context of Haywire, I believe, is the most recent one we talked about. But
wasn't it that one with... the one with Catherine Zeta-Jones as the sleep doctor.
And Channing Tatum.
Oh, was that... That was Soderbergh as well. Yeah. We've talked about a lot of Soderbergh.
That was going to be his last film. He's done this one rather quickly.
He said this is his last film, and it was made for telly, but it got a cinema release over here.
Oh, because HBO made it.
Yes, HBO made it because, in the words of the press release, Hollywood said it was too gay, even though he made Magic Mike, which is... It's not gay, but it's, you know, homoerotic, I guess.
Anything with a man on it that can give another, that can engorge another man. I keep on thinking about that. Our listener who's like 11 years old, before I say anything now, and I realise this at the start of this podcast.
That's
been
why
horrific.
You've gone all somber.
Yeah.
Is it too gay for an American audience, David?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Is it gayer than the
I don't
bird
want to belittle
cage?
An American audience. No, it's more. Graphic isn't the word, but you know, there's the Birdcage is actually very sort of restrained in terms of its male on male affection, you know, because the couple are an old married couple, so they only really peck each other on the cheek every now and again, and mostly just have cat fights,
like the French,
very much like the French, but there's a lot of sort of naked flesh and rolling around and snogging and
in the Liberace.
In Liberace,
is it
behind
gay,
the candelabra.
As queer as folk.
I didn't see that. I don't really want to just list things it's as gay as. I think that would be not doing the film justice.
Is it as Liberace, gay as a coiffured poodle? With pink, all its fur has been dyed pink.
Definitely. There are about four coiffured poodles in this film.
They?
Yeah. In fact, that's how they met. Scott was an animal handler in films, and when he met Liberace through their mutual friend Scott Bakula, he said, "Oh, I could help your poodle with its blindness." And that's how they became friends. And then lovers, and then sort of surrogate parent and child as well. It gets very complicated.
What's Liberace's full name?
Or
is it like Sting? It's just another
name.
No,
Liberace is his surname. He's got a kind of obscure
Lionel,
Eastern
probably.
European. It's like Vlad the Impaler Liberace or something like that.
And just for people who don't know, he's a famous pianist. And tell us a bit more about
very
him.
Very famous pianist, sort of a massive star before... Elvis and all of that. He's the era just before, but had success way into the 80s. He ended up, he died in the 80s. But famous for his enormously flamboyant stage shows in which he'd wear enormous flowing capes and sequins and his pianos. You know, he'd be driven in a sort of Bentley on stage because his trail was so long, and everyone would be, you know, it's all incredibly what we now call, you know, camp stuff.
Elton John.
But nobody suspected him as being gay. He was incredibly popular with grannies. He was sort of the granny's favourite, but he was known as Mr. Showmanship. So he was just an incredible live pianist, basically.
It's amazing how many things we overlook because someone is eccentric.
Yeah, absolutely. And it turns out it was staring us in the face the entire time.
Give us an example of that.
I can't think of any recent examples.
There's probably things we are overlooking right now.
But, you know,
in the future we'll find out.
People
never
used to think Elton John was gay, and he did the same sort of thing. He came out on a big piano and that.
Well, he's. I think Liberace's probably a, you know, influence for Elton John, isn't it? It's a very similar thing. But what I found about this film was The Life of Liberace. I didn't know much about the man. I knew who he was, but I didn't know much about his private life or history, life story. I found that really interesting. It's an odd film because it's incredibly well acted. Michael Douglas is really good as Liberace, and he sort of humanises him enough, but he's still a sort of larger than life, very, very odd man. Very odd man. And Matt Damon is incredibly likeable, and really, he's the heart of the piece. You're on his side, really. And then the other people who kind of are scattered around the movie are all very good as well, specifically Rob Lowe, who plays his plastic surgeon, who's very funny. But it's sort of, in terms of its storyline, it's a bit one-dimensional. It's just like the relationship's going well, and then they mistreat each other and have a fight, but in the end it's slightly happy, even though he dies of AIDS.
Is it a comedy?
Yes. Comedy drama, really. It's a character piece. At its heart, it's a character piece because there isn't much plot, really. It's just about the two of them. The entire thing is the two of them. And it's based upon the actual guy's autobiography as well.
And I read
of the same name, Behind the Candelabra.
I read a five-star review in the... I think it was a Telegraph. Yes, I'm reading right-wing papers.
Yeah.
Five stars, which is quite incredible from a film critic.
Yes.
He said it looked beautiful.
It does. I thought, actually, it was quite artlessly directed, which is surprising for Soderbergh, who's usually, you know, does a lot with his shots, I think. He's a lot, actually, with non-linear time of kind of you're listening to the soundtrack of one sequence whilst watching very kind of in and out of focus shots of a different thing happening over the time. You know, he does a lot. This is very much a shot just covering the action, really. It's not... It's stark, I'd say. It's beautiful. Like, the cinematography is, you know, it's the lighting is fantastic and the set dressing and art design's, you know, amazing. Probably just original. It's probably... They know enough about the man that it's probably quite accurate. But it's... yeah, I mean, I did enjoy it. I thought it wasn't everything it was trying to be.
Do you think because it was made for TV, that's why it was shot like that?
Quite possibly. I think it probably felt a bit like it had advert breaks built into it as well. There's quite a bit of fading out.
Like,
yeah.
Being Elmo was, I mean, it's fine. I really resent seeing that at the cinema.
I know. Literally fade to black every 11 minutes.
Yeah.
But Marek's being wooed by Buddy again.
Oh, Bubba.
Yeah, I'm sorry I've sort of underwhelmed you with my chat about this film, but it was sort of good, but not great.
But it's got such good reviews.
Isn't it interesting? There aren't any homosexual actors in it. Isn't that strange?
Well, aren't there?
I think it almost feels like... Well, yeah, of course, but it almost feels like that was a selling point of it, of watching heterosexual men try and be comfortable kissing each other. I don't know, it's... Very odd. It just seems odd that they didn't...
Why isn't Rupert Everett in it?
No, that's not what I mean. I just
Alan
mean
Cummings.
It's odd, you know?
Alan Cummings in it.
Yeah, I mean, we could list them again. It wouldn't... It's not really what I want to...
I think it's great these days that now everyone's homosexual.
Is that true? I didn't read that.
There's a press release coming out. Everyone's a bit homosexual.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if part of the reason it's got such good reviews is all the papers are going, see, we like gay people. And we really like them. We really like them, and we like seeing them on the telly.
Yeah.
It's one of those films that's cool. I think films get momentum, don't they?
Mm.
Like, it's cool to like a sort of Michael Douglas comeback film of him playing something quite camp and Matt Damon playing it.
Yeah.
And it's good to like, it's, yeah, it's cool to like.
But they've
it.
Already, Hollywood's already sort of passed through the Brokeback Mountain barrier. So I don't know why. Stop smirking. I don't know why this film is a problem for them. You know,
it isn't. I think that do you know what? I think probably the reason it didn't get picked up is because
they didn't think there was a market
doesn't
for
have
it.
A bit of a, it doesn't have much of a plot.
I read that they.
It doesn't have much to say either. I don't need a plot for a character piece. You know, it is a claustrophobic them trapped in an enormous luxury together, with a very imbalanced power relationship, and that's interesting in itself. But they don't do anything new with that. You've seen everything that happens 1,000 times.
The reason this in the review I read of it, they said that Michael Douglas should be up for an Oscar maybe for it, and it hasn't been picked up by Hollywood and lauded.
Yeah.
But they said there's a problem in Hollywood. I don't know about because I don't know much about it, that Hollywood doesn't really like, because of the HBO link, it was made for TV. They don't like the fact that a TV movie is getting all these plaudits because it sort of defeats the whole object of Hollywood.
They like to define themselves as being bigger than TV and always will be. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, with the sort of budgets TV shows are being made on now, like...
Bigger than Hollywood.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Where is the line? I mean, we can't even get it right in our blooming challenges.
Oh, I'd like to point out, by the way, whoever said, oh, I wouldn't go and see this reboot... because these famous, it hasn't got famous people in it. What? So that's it now, is it? We've got to put Channing Tatum and Jennifer Lawrence and everything. Otherwise, you won't get it. You are the reason that Hollywood is dying.
Yeah, let's not forget that Bruce Willis started out in moonlighting.
This is a reference for those people who haven't been listening or skipped a podcast to in our challenge, and we have to recast something. We have been picking... there's been a debate over people picking TV stars ahead of
TV
movies.
TV stars who have been in movies.
No, I disagree.
Yeah, it's not like
you
I'm
can't
picking...
disagree they were in movies.
Well,
they
let me
were
read
in
it.
Movies.
Okay,
it's
let
not
me read
like
it.
I've picked Gareth Bale to be in it.
Okay,
is it?
Well, listen
even
to this
he
then.
Count.
Listen
he
to
would
this
make
then.
A good Doctor Who, though.
He's a Facebook thing, a message from Andy McAfee. He says this: regarding the controversy a couple of weeks ago about TV actors being cast in film roles, I'd like to suggest a new rule. If you have to explain any particular actors are by describing their TV roles, they're deemed a TV actor rather than a movie actor and should be disqualified.
No,
also, I don't watch any of this thing. I'm finished reading it. I'm finished reading it here. Also,
guys,
I don't watch
this
any
really
of
this. Really peaking, so I'm just going to have to cut it all.
Don't just de-peak it. Also, I don't watch any of the same shows as David, and therefore I don't know who any of them are, so therefore you're wrong.
Oh, okay then. So now we're only allowed to go and see films with people that we've heard of in as well. Is that the rule now?
I think
now?
You're changing the argument there.
Idiot, you're all idiots. Fuck you.
There's an 11-year-old child listening to this right now. And his parents,
I'll take him out of the room.
His parents have overheard that bit of it, and they've gone in and they said, Alex Wishart, which is his name, as he wrote in last week, you're no longer allowed to listen to this podcast. Why? Because Danielle Ward couldn't keep her filthy mouth shut.
Marek, what film did you go and see this? Oh, how many Davids would you give? What's
it's interesting.
It? Candlecake.
Candlecake. Behind the Candlecake, I would give it 6.5 Davids.
Six and a half Davids.
It's an interesting
all
story, but all it made me want to know is more. I wanted to see a better film about the same man. Do you know what I mean? I found it intriguing, but that's probably mostly his life is intriguing.
Finding the Candelabra 2 might be better then.
Yeah, maybe, but he does die of AIDS at the end.
Oh, spoilers!
Okay.
What did you go see, Maren?
I was on the Isle of Wight, so. The Isle of Wight Cineworld hasn't got particularly good choice. I would have liked to have gone to see Behind the Candelabra, but I was only left with one choice, really.
Whistle Down the Wind.
yes. And that broke halfway through, so I had to go and see After Earth.
Oh!
After Earth.
The Will Smith and Jaden Smith sci-fi film.
Marek.
Yeah, but I went with my brother and his stepson, who is 15, so that restricts you as well. Especially when you're not wearing any pants and trousers. okay. anyway,
After Earth, what's it about?
Well, interesting, it's one of those occasions where this happens all the time, where two similar films come out at the same time.
It's like Oblivion.
Quite similar.
Right.
I'll tell you what it's about. Will Smith is this sort of aloof space commander who doesn't really engage with his family after the death of his daughter. So he's got a bit of a strained relationship with his son, Kitai, played by Jaden Smith.
Son.
Yeah. So that should be quite easy for them to add that out. The backstory is the human race has been attacked by aliens, and they've sort of, everyone's left Earth, and these aliens could track humans because of the smell of their fear. Imagine that.
Like an owl tracks a mouse through the colour of its urine.
Yeah, well, it's not. I don't think it's urine or excrement based. I think it's just a different sort of pheromone smell.
Oh, right.
Anyway, Will Smith became a big hero because he managed to override the feeling of fear because it's purely psychological.
Of course it is.
Can you imagine that? So he, so the monsters couldn't track him, so he killed lots of these monsters and became this big hero. Anyway, Will Smith comes back from a mission, and his wife says, oh, you should take Jaden Smith along with you on your next trip so you can do a bit of father-son thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no. The blooming spaceship gets into a bit of a problem, doesn't it?
You're joking.
No.
What, the toilet gets bunged up?
Toilet gets bunged up. And first of all, they think, oh, it's kitchen roll in the toilet roll.
Yeah.
That'll clear itself out. Doesn't
the
problem
all the missions it escalates your son on
yeah it oh escalates I'm not sure I'm just guessing it was
okay,
kitchen
yeah,
roll
yeah, right.
Or some sort of bung up in the toilet which made the spaceship crash and everyone died.
Yeah,
so they're left on Earth, but it's an Earth that's evolved into a different Earth where it's really dangerous, and this and there was one of these monsters that smelt fear on the ship and it's escaped.
Oh, bugger.
Will Smith, well, he also went out, won't he? Oh no, he's not. He's been injured, isn't he? So his son's got to go and find the other half of the ship to get this thing to, so they can escape.
Does Will Smith die?
It's not about him dying, it's about his relationship with his son.
But he does,
and he can there's no spoilers. We've okay. got to watch the spoilers. He can monitor, he can see everything his son sees, so he's almost like, because of these, he's got this
clock watch,
sort of super watch, something
super
like that.
Watch, okay.
That he can see everything his son sees and see what's going on around at this, from the spaceship control center.
How old's his son?
His son is whoever Jaden Smith is, 14,
this
15.
Oh, I wouldn't want to see everything my 14-year-old son sees.
Now, this film is this film was directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh!
It was, wasn't
they've
it?
Kept
I
that
remember,
quiet.
Yes, no, I remember being really surprised because normally he puts his name over everything.
I think it's an incredible term because M. Night Shyamalan people hate because he... Basically, you must have seen, if you haven't seen, Sixth Sense was good, The Village was quite good, and then it's been a massive falling down to the happening, and then The Last Airbender, the worst
The Last Airbender, yeah.
And The Devil, did you see The Devil?
Was it the one on the lift?
He wrote it, yeah, I don't know if you wrote
I didn't mind that one, actually.
It was all right. I mean, it was really obvious what the twist was.
I didn't
get
it.
Is there a twist in this?
Not especially.
Is he doesn't the writer, have a director, or is just director?
He's a writer-director. He wrote it with someone else, but there's none of that. He normally puts himself in a cameo, a real self-aggrandising cameo,
yeah.
Where
Dick.
You want to punch him in the face.
Is he the monster?
Well, in real life, probably. So everyone hates... So automatically, as soon as you say M. Night Shyamalan,
yeah.
You just think, everyone gets their knives out.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, isn't it, that like he was at a time a director that could sell a film on his name, and now...
Fall from grace. And now he curses the film. Now he's had
but
to take his name off
it. It's not just jealousy of success. He has made everyone hate him through his smuggery and then not producing good film.
Because of the cameos, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, there's a twist. There's a twist. I'm cleverer than you. I've put a twist in this film.
But also, I think there's something about his film was where... He tries to give you a message about the human race and about the sort of... And you think, do you know what? I make my own decisions about the human race, thanks, Shyamalan, whatever
your
name is.
Have you seen The Knowing, the one about the trees?
Oh
my gosh.
They should have called it Mark Wahlberg versus Trees.
That is such a brilliant film because of how bad it is.
The Knowing's the Nicolas Cage one, isn't it?
Oh, no,
not The Knowing.
Not The Knowing.
The Happening's one.
The Happening, yeah.
But it was supposed to be a B-movie, Happening. It was supposed to be really hammy. Because I remember watching The Happening going, is this real? Am I really watching this film?
Really?
It's
isn't not meant to be a big
no, because when you watch it, you think Mark Wahlberg isn't that bad.
Yeah.
And yet he's doing one of the worst performances in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
But because it was supposed to be like a B-movie.
Well, isn't it?
Yeah, they're supposed to be acting like that. I don't know. Basically, M. Night Shyamalan, you probably, if you listen to this, you probably think he's a dick as well. We should get back to the film.
Yeah.
Yes, so...
I'm interested now.
So because of the... Sorry, question.
No, go ahead.
Because I knew it was by M. Night Shyamalan, immediately my sort of a weird thing happened, in which my expectations just dropped by tenfold.
Yeah.
So I just thought, this film is going to be awful, or it's going to annoy me, or there's going to be him coming down from the clouds as God telling me how to live my life. None of that really happened, and it's just an average film. Like on IMDb, it's got 4.8, which I think is unnecessarily harsh.
Really?
I give it 6 Marics, but that's really generous because I was expecting. But I think because my expectations were so bad.
Yeah.
It's just the same as Oblivion. I think it's probably suffered in the States as well, because they've had far more of the Will and Jaden Smith media circus promoting it.
Yeah.
Where he's just been going on all of these programmes with his son because they want to talk to Will Smith. And then he's been pushing his son in front of everybody. That's going, he's a film star too.
I think Jaden... They do a weird thing at the start. Jaden Smith is narrating what's happening.
They do a rap.
They do not do a rap.
It's Carlton from Fresh Prince.
He was. It'd be brilliant if Carlton was in it. Give him a film. I'm not sure I'd watch What Happened to Carlton as Skinner.
Dave's old flatmate is exactly like a white Carlton. He is amazing. Like a white
Carlton. Wow. Which is weird because Carlton's like a white dude. That was the joke. So it. Basically, what Danielle's saying is, I'm friends with a white man.
Wow, you've got white friends.
Yeah, yeah.
That is so 2013.
Thank you.
So this film, I feel Jake. I couldn't work out whether they were trying to put on this weird space future voice, whether it was a mesh of accents, or it was just really bad acting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's annoying sometimes.
Because Jaden Smith at the start of it, I spoke to my nephew and my brother. Went, could you understand what James Field was actually saying? Surely the opening start of the film, when you're introducing it, doing a narrative thing, you should be able to understand what the main character is saying. And he hasn't. I feel sorry for him because he's going to grow up to hate his dad, because his dad is, Will Smith's quite good. I think Will Smith is a good actor. I think he's watchable.
Yeah.
And he's charismatic. His son hasn't got that.
His son never gets to have sex with Will Smith, which is always going to be the thing that.
What? What are you saying?
What do you mean?
What happened to your... What?
What's going on? I mean...
No, but like, Will Smith's really attractive, and everybody else in the world can potentially have sex with Will Smith, but for his son.
But Dave's other flatmate looks exactly like a white Will Smith.
No, Carlton.
But the other one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that other one, yeah.
So you secretly fancied Dave's old flatmate?
No, I don't
understand what's happening.
Carry on.
You just said that it must be terrible that a son can't have sex with his dad.
Not our son. Being Jaden Smith, you're the only person in the world that doesn't get to fantasise about having sex with his dad.
Tom Cruise won't let himself either.
He's also got two of the children, so they let.
Yes, true.
What are you saying?
This is getting cut.
No, leave this in. This is the interesting stuff.
I think that it's hard enough being a child star and being liked, but to have to go on a publicity drive with your dad when you're trying to establish yourself as an actor must be really embarrassing.
There was a big thing on British TV you may have seen where Will Smith came on and he sat when he on the Graham Norton show.
Oh yeah,
and
Carlton came out.
Yeah, previously they did it last time when Will Smith it was an impromptu singing of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. They weren't got 6 million hits on YouTube. Yeah. This time they did it.
Jazzy Jeff came out, yeah, and they started, all, and then Carlton came out and did a dance.
Oh. It was all staged, it was two staged.
It was.
Yeah.
And Jaden Smith hasn't got. I don't even know anything about him. So he's like a sort of little robot.
Yeah, dressed up little robot.
A robot Will Smith, but someone sucked out all the personality.
But I think Will Smith sucked out all the personality because I get the feeling he's a really overbearing father, and he just doesn't see. You wouldn't have any space to grow into if he was telling you how to be a good person all the time.
He's one of those people who's not. Those people who are nice all the time.
Yeah.
To everyone. I don't trust those
people.
Do you
think Jaden Smith will become a serial killer?
I think he'll become like turning to Simon Fielder.
I don't know who that is.
He's an obscure British comic who's always nice to everyone. That was just for me and Danielle Redrick.
Well.
Is
After Earth supposed to be a pun on Afterbirth?
No.
Right.
It's just average. It's just the steady decline of M. Night Shyamalan.
I think he should. Sounds like he's had a bit of a rise. Yeah.
No, because apparently there's a website, and I forget what it's called, where that charts Rotten Tomatoes scores, and you can see a graph of people's careers. And M. Night Shyamalan was, I think, almost unique in having such a high one, and then incrementally every single one was lower than the previous one.
Yeah.
Poor M. Night Shyamalan.
He could have been a god if he'd have just walked into a bus after the premiere of Sixth Sense.
Or he could be completely unknown if he hadn't been lucky early on.
Yeah.
I got the twist in The Sixth Sense after about 40 minutes.
I didn't.
Really?
I did. No, someone
really
told me about it before I saw it. That was good of them.
If ever no one speaks to a character in a film, I assume they're dead anyway. So
you can't say it now.
Everybody's seen The Sixth Sense.
Not the 11-year-old. He's got to wait another 4 years to watch that.
I have a 5-year spoiler rule. If a film's older than 5 years, you're allowed to talk about how it ends.
Yeah, Marek, we have 8 or 9 other listeners we need to consider as well.
Yeah, so we should. If you are a listener and you want to cut, well, we finished that bit of a review now, I suppose, didn't we?
Yeah.
The main thing you want to put is now, if you listen, it might already have happened. But Film Fandango Live is on Monday.
Monday night!
The 17th of June.
Cheese and wine!
You can buy tickets at the... If you go to the... type the Forge Camden Film Fandango into Google and you can buy tickets. Please buy tickets to it because we might not do another one if you don't come.
Yeah, if we don't sell enough tickets, we probably won't bother.
And it will be your chance to be on the podcast as well.
Yeah, so we will go around and we'll talk to you about what you thought of the film RoboCop and our own films and maybe any films. Go to the cinema this weekend so we don't have to.
Also,
see a film and then we'll talk about it on Monday with you.
Yeah.
And so next
Jennifer
week,
Lawrence might be there.
Jennifer Lawrence will probably
she
be there.
She might be there. She might be there.
You've asked her.
She might be there.
Wow.
I heard Wendy Wason might be there.
Oh, then Jennifer won't come.
Wow. okay. So, also next week's podcast, we're going to be discussing how we made our films, which you'll see online.
They'll
at
be
some
online,
point.
Or you can see them first if you come to the Forge and Foundry.
The premieres of them, providing all the equipment works okay.
Yeah.
And we'll be discussing RoboCop. You can watch that on Netflix as well if you haven't already seen it.
And I will be dressed like one of the Night's Watch.
From Game of Thrones. Yeah. Are you making TV references again to annoy Marion?
It's like a film. It's like a really long film.
Just call it TV Fandango.
Yeah. TV tap dance.
So instead of challenges,
right?
We've just read letters because there's a letter here asking for recommendations. I mean, do you want to read it?
Oh,
read it out.
What accent should I do? So, this is from James Cresswell, who is in the West Midlands. I'm going to do an East Midlands accent. hello, Danielle, David and Marek. I'm currently exploiting the Netflix month free trial to watch the new series of Arrested Development. I'd failed to predict, though, how psychologically overwhelming it would be to have such a massive choice of films available to me for the entirety of June. So, can you recommend me anything that I should definitely watch without question before the month's over? I'd keep the subscription if I had more income, but it's such as Britain and all that. Also, as Twin Peaks is another critically acclaimed American TV series I'm currently watching through, I thought it'd be quite interesting to see what you think of the feature-length prequel Fire Walk With Me, especially as, even by Lynch standards, it has a reputation for being particularly divisive. Thanks for the podcast and for presumably reading this in a funny accent. I'm from the West Midlands, by the way, so there's a wealth of comedy to be mined in true historical Midlands style from that fact, James.
Oh, thanks, James.
What? And that accent.
Marek
was
amazed by that accent, weren't you?
That's not West Midlands.
No, it's more of a kind of Nottingham Derby sort of accent.
But Midlands is more Birmingham, not that.
I know, I didn't go for that, but I told you before I started I was going to do East Midlands rather than West Midlands.
That sounded like it was Southern.
No, that was more Nottingham Derby.
I didn't even know there are places that in Nottingham.
Should we talk about the things James said? I've not seen Twin Peaks. I totally intend to, but I've not seen it. You are a big fan, aren't you, Dan?
I really love Twin Peaks, even though I still am only about halfway through the second series, even though it's on like Netflix, I've got the box set. I'd have to put them into a thing every time I want to watch it. I have to get it out of a box and put it into a machine every time I want to watch it.
When did it come out? Because I remember it was so big when it came out, wasn't it? And I watched a few episodes.
Yeah, early 90s. Yeah. So I haven't seen Fire Walk With Me because I don't want to see it until I've seen the whole...
Of course, it's all in one.
That's what happened
narrative.
To... What's her name?
Laura Palmer.
Laura Palmer. That tells you that conclusion, is it?
I think the conclusion is in the series. I don't like...
I've not seen any of it, so I don't want
any spoilers. Yeah, don't send us emails telling us who killed her. So,
recommendations from Netflix.
Anyway, yes. Back to the original question.
Yes, I've got a lot here.
Have you?
Yes.
You've been looking through the catalogue.
You can have a look through it while I quickly say mine, if you like.
Yeah.
There are loads of good films on Netflix. Here are Marek's recommendations. That's me. Headhunters by Joe Nesbo.
Fantastic film.
The Baader-Meinhof Complex.
Not seen it.
About a terrorist group in Germany. It is brilliant. We watched it. We covered it before the conversation. We're Francis Ford Coppola's less lauded masterpiece.
The Raid is on there now.
Okay.
And
fairly
Drive.
Recently. It's yes, and Drive's
both
on there.
Those are
recent.
I also, one of my favourite old films, In the Heat of the Night, with Sidney Poitier. Is one of the greatest detective films ever.
Oh, I love the detective film.
With Rod Steiger, I think it's Roy Steiger, something. He gets an Oscar in the supporting role, I think, as a police officer. That's brilliant. Downfall, where about Hitler's Albert Gantz, he's an amazing actor who plays probably the best portrayal of Hitler ever. Black Book, which is a very good war film. Glenn Ross, an acting masterpiece. And comedies, 21 Jump Street and The Other Guys on there. And documentaries, you can't go wrong with American Movie.
Oh, brilliant. American
One of
movie.
My absolute favourite all-time films ever is on Netflix, which is Midnight Cowboy, which I adore. I think it's one of the most beautiful films ever made. The Raid and Driver on there. You've just taken it off me while I was having a look.
I thought you could remember three things.
No, this is the generation game.
I was coming to Danielle and David looking on the internet now. And
no.
A bit of an argument.
A film that I think is really good, even though it's got Gwyneth Paltrow in it, is The Talented Mr. Ripley.
I like Gwyneth Paltrow.
I'd like to be a friend in real life. I think she'd probably
cooks good food.
She's got a cookbook, isn't she?
Oh, has she?
She doesn't do gluten.
I didn't wish to plug that. She doesn't do gluten?
No, not really.
Desperado's on there. Desperado is fun.
There's loads of great
loads
films.
Of stuff. We're not paid by them or anything. We just think, you know.
That's the great thing. Just start watching. Just
start watching stuff.
There's take a gamble on something.
Yeah, and then, in fact, take a gamble on something and tell us to watch it. It's probably good. We've got more letters here. This one is from Tom Mould, who is originally from Suffolk, but now resides in East London. So I will do him as South African.
Don't you do everyone as South African?
It's one of the accents. Fine, I won't do him as South African.
No, go on, I like it.
I'll do him as a pirate. Which would you prefer?
South African pirate.
South African pirate. Daniel, David, Medic and Buddy. All right? I've been catching up on past podcasts, that's quite hard to say, of late, and just wanted to congratulate Medic on his Norfolk accent from a few weeks back.
Thank you very much.
It was spot on, and reminded me of the instructor at the Swaffham paintball venue. Anyway, the main point of this... that's what he says. The main point of this email was to say that I really appreciate you guys covering European films, both as new releases and retrospectively. I wanted to suggest that you should also look to countries that aren't renowned or prominent. For example, France, Spain, Scandinavian countries.
Maybe they're the ones that you're saying look beyond France, Spain and the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, those are more prominent, aren't they?
Yeah.
So we should look for some Austrian cinema or maybe Latvian.
There's a good Russian film called Kolya, K-O-L-Y-A, which won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film a few years ago. You should watch that. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I wanted to suggest two titles that I greatly enjoyed. Bullhead 2011 from Belgium/Netherlands and Breathing 2011 from Austria. Both are great examples of feature directorial debuts. If you do get around to watching them, I hope you enjoy them as much as I did. Keep up the good work, guys. Best, Tom Malt. P.S. Following on from my previous tweet, I wanted to reiterate that Buddy is still my favourite character. Thanks, bye.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, but the actor who plays him's a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan plays Buddy in this podcast.
He does. And he drinks water loud.
I've got a short letter from Brendan Stevens from Hereford. Hereford's quite sort of below the
kind of, it's a bit Walesy, a bit Bristol-y.
Bristol's like that isn't it?
Bristol's. Yeah, Bristol Wales.
Hoi Danielle Merrick, spelt my name wrong. And David. My film suggestion of the week, 21st Furniture, written and directed by Lena Burnham, with real life mother and sister playing the same roles in the movie. And you can tell, top performances. You can rent it on Blinkbox. No advertising. You can rent it on unnamed website.
After we've talked about Netflix for 10 minutes.
For £2.49. Good example of rambling US indie comedy drama rather than that totals along nicely. Cheers, Brendan from Hereford. Freelance graphic designer.
We've seen Tiny Furniture.
Yeah, it's good.
I think I recommended it. Yeah, it was the one that led to the TV show Girls.
It's a really good film.
They filmed it all on a Canon 7D. Low budget. I'm really fascinated by this. Probably everyone else is bored by it. You're bored by it. Well, I'm bored by you. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Well, thank you for your letters. If you'd like to get in touch, then do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com.
Or, even better, write it on a piece of paper and come and bring it to us at the Forge and Foundry on Monday, 17th of June, and hand it over to us.
There'll be tickets on the door, so if you don't internet, then how are you listening to this? But if you don't internet, just come on down. You'll be more than welcome. Have a drink with us.
But not on us.
Not on us, no.
Yeah, but near us.
Near us. Yes, or if you're lazy, just leave a message on our Facebook wall if you want to get in touch. Facebook.com/filmfandango.
Yeah, just take, and don't give anything back for all the work we put in.
Yeah, if you'd like to do that, then you can also tweet us at filmfandango. So,
we had to watch a film this week.
We did have to watch a film this week. Who recommended this film?
It was Fabrice Ferrer, the French
Fabrice.
Guy.
Fabrice!
Oh, hello!
Of course, Fabrice.
It was me.
Fabrice. We watched a film called Primer. Now, who would like to explain the plot?
I had to write it down too.
There are some guys, they find out that they can travel through time.
Okay, don't jump ahead. That's sort of it, but the bit we can actually explain is there are some guys who, sort of extracurricular from their work, are doing R&D in a garage. There's four guys who are trying to find a way of reducing the weight of computer components so they'll run faster, and inadvertently they discover a strange form of time travel.
Which is the time travel between two points.
A and B.
A and B. You can only travel between these two points, but the something about how long you're in a box.
Yeah, it's possibly the most difficult film to follow. Here's my argument for this film. It's a low-budget film that was made in 2004 by writer, director, producer, actor.
Star, did the music, did the editing.
For $7,000.
Yeah.
It is incredible. I think that's an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
And it got really big because I would argue this is not a one-sitting film. So you see it and think, 79 minutes is quite a short film.
Yeah.
You can't possibly understand it, 79 minutes. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
No.
Because what you're seeing is you need to watch it two or three times to understand it or read about it. So you watch it once, you go, because what you're seeing is after the time travel has taken place, the last... you're seeing the last record after like maybe three or four different time travel people.
Yes.
People have come back in time and changed things and changed things again and changed things again. You're seeing the last record of that. So in order to understand that, you need to watch the film and watch it again. So I think it's impossible to review on one
sitting. One reviewer said anyone who claims to understand what's going on in Primer after one sitting is either a savant or a liar.
Now, I would say that I'm not an idiot. I've studied physics. I studied mathematics at university. and I found this film dull. I did not enjoy it. I sat through it, and I don't mind watching a film I don't completely understand. I don't mind an author that's trying to do something interesting and original. Equally, I don't mind... I don't dislike a film because I don't understand it either. I dislike this film because I thought it was a really complicated idea thrown at a screen and really badly plotted as a piece of cinema.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the clever, you know, thing that might excite a mathematician on paper, you know, the idea of if I do plot all of this out as if it was real life and then mix it all up so that it is a puzzle but it does actually make sense, is that actually entertaining for an audience? I would say no. I didn't find it entertaining. My brother watched this with us, and we found it quite funny, the idea that you invent time travel and you do things as boring as these people do with the invention of time travel. They are the most tedious people you could ever meet. They don't emotionally react to anything that happens at all. At any point, they just sort of babble on inanely about everything.
See, I'm sort of going to play the opposite to what you thought, because the tone of it is unlike any other film, because you're so used to being almost spoon-fed films, just spoon-fed the plot. This doesn't tell you that this is an important bit.
No.
And there's bits, because you're watching a film that's been changing time, so there are allusions to what might have happened, i.e., I won't do a spoiler, but at the party, something big happened that has been changed, and they don't tell you what the big moments are. You have to sort of pick up on them. And everything's at the same level of tone.
Yes.
Whether it's because they are not Hollywood actors, but I quite enjoyed the fact it's just it's like a detective puzzle that you have to watch two or three times, and it's not the conventional way of watching a film. It's a completely different way of watching a film. You just sit, watch the film, go, right, I half understand that. Read something on the internet, and then go back.
I concede it's a noble experiment. I didn't enjoy their results.
But I don't think I'm in a position to judge this film until I've watched it two or three times and it sort of worked out. And I was quite, I think, well, good for you. You're doing something different with film.
Yeah.
And a low budget. We're judging this against big Hollywood blockbusters, you know, and all the films this is like a bloke's made this himself on a camera, literally a cheap camera he's hired for £5,000. And it's interesting, and people are still talking about it today, 9 years later, this low-budget film. It's become a cult film. So I think you've got to applaud that.
Sure, I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. I did not enjoy the experience of having to sit there for what felt like 3 hours.
It feels so long. That's the thing, I don't...
We didn't know anything about the characters. We didn't, because they're not emotionally reacting to anything. You're right. It probably makes logical sense that all of they emotionally react in large ways to the things that go wrong. So when they've gone back and changed them again, they're now being methodical and precise in the exact same way they approach their work. But that means you never get to see them be different, and so you don't know how they feel about anything. They only seem to just get a bit tired. That's really the entire journey of the characters, is they get tired.
When you're watching something, you don't know, you think this scene's a bit weird.
Yeah.
Because you don't know that this character's from something that's about to happen in the future. So it just feels like you're watching a weird scene.
They never changed clothes or, which makes it even harder. Like, just any signifiers that wouldn't belittle it. They wouldn't spoon feed you it at all. It was just like, it's just sort of interminable. It doesn't feel like it's under 90 minutes at all. You know, it drags like crazy.
It really...
I mean, I find the early scenes dull, before the time travel
exists. I think the first, it goes on for... But it feels completely different to anything I've seen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. I think, you know, it's... If you want to see something you haven't seen, then undeniably, you know, sit down, stick it on.
Yeah, it really... But the thing is, while I completely take your point that it's a film that needs to be watched more than once, it probably does, but I have no desire to watch it again. Like, I don't care about it enough to want to. It's not even like Memento that, you know, once you finish, you think, oh, wow, you want to watch it again because you want to know what you've missed. If fan of Primer. I don't want to revisit it. And that, if I've not got a complete experience from the film and I don't want to watch it again, surely that's a bit of a fail.
Yeah, I didn't even understand the basic time travelling concept, if I'm honest. I couldn't get my head around the whole, you know, 6-hour thing. And I couldn't even work that out. So stuff was happening.
Because you were looking this up, weren't you? The guy who wrote it was also a script editor, or he helped out the script of Looper.
He was thanked in Looper. That's all it was. They thanked him in the credits of Looper.
And one of the problems I had with Looper was I think it gets too bogged down with its own physics. And sometimes you want to go, look, we've already taken the leap of faith that you can travel through time. You do not have to explain to me why this is theoretically
possible.
Can't you
just do Back to the Future?
And again, not for dumb reasons, but if they'd made great characters and it was interesting and I wanted to know more about it and you give me all of this amazing physics stuff, that's great. But I sort of felt that there's too much physics and mathematics and not enough heart.
For me, it's so claustrophobic what they create with this, that if you're creating a claustrophobic film, it has to be a character piece. And I thought they were carbon copies of one another, and they were both boring people. And I thought that was its biggest crime. It's quite possible that this structure would have been fascinating if we were watching two people we could engage with. But I just really I don't think that's the actor's fault. I think it's the writer, director, actor, choreographer.
King.
Do you think that added to the realism, though? For me, it made it seem like almost...
Sure, it was as real as watching boring people talk after work. Like, I don't go to films for, you know, pure realism. What's the point? I don't see the point of doing that. Like, they invent time travel, and all they can think to do is safely play the stock market so they don't change anything so they can make some money. Then they don't spend any of that money. They don't do anything with it. And then one of them has a slight flight of fancy as he gets out of control that he might punch his boss and then undo it so he didn't. And that's as dangerous as they get. And I'm just like, this is dull.
There's that big thing, we need to find out. I don't know. My jury's still out on this film. I can't even give it a mark.
Right.
Because I don't think it's fair to give it a mark. Because I don't think it's like watching half a film watching it once, probably.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't give it a mark, because to rate it against proper budgeted professional films is not right. It's not right because this is a home project.
No, but even you have to be able to judge it on one sitting.
Yeah,
I don't think it's meant for that. It's almost meant for two sittings.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? To be able to review it properly, I think
I don't want to have to do that again.
I'm going to force you to.
Oh, I'm not watching it again. Life's too short, Marek.
Life's too short.
He's made another film. There's a tweet here from...
The other film was meant to be brilliant, isn't it?
Neil Bastardo at Colonel Witch, who says, haven't seen Primer, but have seen Shane Carruth's follow-up Upstream Colour, which was brilliant. To keep an eye out for it. It's not out yet. I think the festival was out in the cinema. But he filmed that on a Panasonic GH2, which cost about £500.
Wow.
So he's quite an indie filmmaker. Yeah.
I absolutely applaud the fact, and I think it's good that I'm glad I've seen it, but I don't want to watch it again.
I think it shows there's a real dearth in intellectual films, you know, because that's still, there aren't that many sort of clever, like Memento, not many puzzling films around, are there?
Oh, I don't know, I think there are, and I think it's...
What?
I think to go, well, exactly, like now it sounds like you're saying... Oh, you didn't like Primer because you didn't get it.
I'm not saying
that. I did get it. I didn't like it.
I think, you know, I don't know. For me, films are a storytelling medium. And I didn't think the story was well told in this. I thought it was just handing you the pieces and going, you sort it out.
If you go back in time, would you still watch it?
Yes, because otherwise my ear will start bleeding for some reason that doesn't come to anything.
Yeah, but I'd make sure I had more peanut M&Ms. More peanut M&Ms!
Mm.
Another yog this time.
No yog.
Tried making a homemade yog, but it didn't work.
No yog for you. Well, that was Primer.
And that was the podcast.
That was the podcast. On this, the last podcast before the live show on June the 17th. So we hope to see you there. We're very excited. Our films will be finished, fingers crossed, and we will buy some cheese. We'll probably be drunk already by the time you arrive,
oh,
right, guys?
I am going to be absolutely wankered.
I'm going to start now.
Well, we'll be back next week with more films. So in the meantime, keep watching the films. Bye.
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 Yeah. In fact, that's how they met. Scott was an animal handler in films. And when he met Liberace through their mutual friend, Scott Bakula, he said, oh, I could help your poodle with its blindness. And that's how they became friends. And then lovers, and then sort of surrogate parent and child as well. It gets very complicated.
What's Liberace's full name?
Oh.
Or is it like Sting? It's just another
name. Liberace is his surname. He's got a kind of obscure
Lionel,
Eastern
probably.
European. It's sort. It's Hans. Like Vlad the Impaler Liberace or okay. something like that.
And just for people who don't know, he's a famous pianist. And tell us a bit more about
very
him.
Famous pianist, sort of a massive star before Elvis and all of that. He's the era just before, but had success way into the 80s. He ended up, he died in the 80s. But famous for his enormously flamboyant stage shows in which he, you know, he'd wear enormous flowing capes and sequins and his pianos. You know, he'd be driven in a sort of Bentley on stage because his trail was so long, and everyone would be, you know, it's all incredibly what we now call, you know, camp stuff.
Elton John.
But nobody suspected him as being gay. He was incredibly popular with grannies. He was sort of the granny's favourite, but he was known as Mr. Showmanship. So he was just an incredible live pianist, basically.
It's amazing how many things we overlook because someone is eccentric.
Yeah, absolutely. And it turns out it was staring us in the face the entire time.
Give us an example of that.
I can't think of any recent examples.
There's probably things we are overlooking right now.
But, you know,
in the future we'll
find
out.
People used to think Elton John was gay, and he did the same sort of thing. He came out on a big piano and that.
Well, he's. I think Liberace's probably a, you know, influence for Elton John, isn't it? It's a very similar thing. But what I found about this film was the life of Liberace. I didn't know much about the man. I knew who he was, but I didn't know much about his private life or history, life story. I found that really interesting. It's an odd film because it's incredibly well acted. Michael Douglas is really good as Liberace, and he sort of humanises him enough, but he's still a sort of larger than life, very, very odd man. Very odd man. And Matt Damon is incredibly likeable, and really, he's the heart of the piece. You're on his side, really. And then the other people who kind of are scattered around the movie are all very good as well, specifically Rob Lowe, who plays his plastic surgeon, who's very funny. But it's sort of, in terms of its storyline, it's a bit one-dimensional. It's just like the relationship's going well, and then they mistreat each other and have a fight, but in the end it's slightly happy, even though he dies of AIDS.
Is it a comedy?
Yes. Comedy drama, really. It's a character piece. At its heart, it's a character piece because there isn't much plot, really. It's just about the two of them. The entire thing is the two of them. And it's based upon the actual guy's autobiography as well.
And I read
of the same name, Behind the Candelabra.
I read a five-star review in the, I think it was the Telegraph. Yes, I'm reading right-wing papers.
Yeah.
Five stars, which is quite incredible from a film critic.
Yes.
He said it looked beautiful.
It does. I thought, actually, it was quite artlessly directed. Which is surprising for Soderbergh, who's usually, you know, does a lot with his shots, I think. He's a lot, actually, with non-linear time of kind of you're listening to the soundtrack of one sequence whilst watching very kind of in and out of focus shots of a different thing happening over the time. You know, he does a lot. This is very much just shot, just covering the action, really. It's not. It's stark, I'd say. It's beautiful. Like, the cinematography is, you know, it's the lighting is fantastic and the set dressing and art design's, you know, amazing. Probably just original. It's probably, they know enough about the man that it's probably quite accurate. But it's, yeah, I mean, I did enjoy it. I thought it
wasn't everything it was trying to be.
Do you think because it was made for TV, that's why it was shot like that?
Quite possibly. I think it probably felt a bit like it had advert breaks built into it as well. There's quite a bit of fading out. Yeah.
Being Elmo was, I mean, it's fine. I really resent seeing that at the cinema.
I know. Literally fade to black every 11 minutes.
Yeah.
But Marek's being wooed by Buddy again.
Oh, Bubba.
Yeah, I'm sorry I've sort of underwhelmed you with my chat about this film, but it was sort of good, but not great.
But it's got such good reviews.
Isn't it interesting? There aren't any homosexual actors in it. Isn't that strange?
Well, aren't there?
I think it almost feels that, well, yeah, of course, but it almost feels like that was a selling point of it, of watching heterosexual men try and be comfortable kissing each other. I don't know, it's very odd. It just seems odd that they didn't.
Why isn't Rupert Everett in it?
No, that's not what I mean. It's odd, you know.
Alan Cummings in it.
Yeah, I mean, we could list them again. It wouldn't. It's not really what I want to.
I think it's great these days that now everyone's homosexual.
Is that true? I didn't read that.
There's a press release coming out. Everyone's a bit homosexual.
Okay. I think I wouldn't be surprised if part of the reason it's got such good reviews is all the papers are going, see, we like gay people. And we really like them. We really like them, and we like seeing them on the telly.
Yeah.
It's one of those films that's cool. I think films get momentum, don't they?
Mm.
Like, it's cool to like a sort of Michael Douglas comeback film of him playing something quite camp and Matt Damon playing it. And it's good to like. It's cool to like.
But they've already. Hollywood's already sort of passed through the Brokeback Mountain barrier. So I don't know why. Stop smirking. I don't know why this film is a problem for them. You know,
it isn't. I think that do you know what? I think probably the reason it didn't get picked up is because
they didn't think there was a market
for it. It doesn't have much of a plot.
I read that they.
It doesn't have much to say either. I don't need a plot for a character piece. You know, it is a claustrophobic them trapped in an enormous luxury together, with a very imbalanced power relationship, and that's interesting in itself. But they don't do anything new with that. You've seen everything that happens 1,000 times.
The reason in the review I read of it, they said that Michael Douglas should be up for an Oscar maybe for it, and it hasn't been picked up by Hollywood and lauded.
Yeah.
But they said there's a problem in Hollywood. I don't know about, because I don't know much about it, that Hollywood doesn't really like, because of the HBO link, it was made for TV. They don't like the fact that a TV movie is getting all these plaudits, because it sort of defeats the whole object of Hollywood.
Yes, they like to define themselves as being bigger than TV, and always will be. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, with the sort of budgets TV shows are being made on now, like...
Bigger than Hollywood.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Where is the line? I mean, we can't even get it right in our blooming challenges.
Oh, I'd like to point out, by the way, whoever said, oh, I wouldn't go and see this reboot... because these famous, it hasn't got famous people in it. What, so that's it now, is it? We've got to put Channing Tatum and Jennifer Lawrence and everything, otherwise you won't get it. You are the reason that Hollywood is dying.
Yeah, let's not forget that Bruce Willis started out in Moonlighting.
This is a reference for those people who haven't been listening or skipped a podcast to, in our challenge when we have to recast something, we have been picking... there's been a debate over people picking TV stars ahead of
TV
movies.
TV stars who have been in movies.
No, I disagree.
It's not like
you
I'm
can't
picking...
disagree they were in movies.
Well,
they
let
were
me read
in
that.
Movies.
Okay,
I've picked Gareth Bale to be in it.
Okay,
is it?
Well, listen to this then.
He would make a good Doctor Who, though.
He's a Facebook message from Andy McAfee. He says this: regarding the controversy a couple of weeks ago about TV actors being cast in film roles, I'd like to suggest a new rule. If you have to explain any particular actors by describing their TV roles, they're deemed a TV actor rather than a movie actor and should be disqualified.
No,
also, I don't watch any of the same. I'm finished reading it.
They're
I'm finished reading it yet. Also,
guys,
I don't watch any.
This is
any
really peaking, so I'm just going to have to cut it all.
Don't just deep peek it. Also, I don't watch any of the same shows as David, and therefore I don't know who any of them are, so therefore you're wrong.
Oh, okay then. So now we're only allowed to go and see films with people that we've heard of in as well. Is that the rule now?
You're changing the argument there.
Idiot, you're all idiots. Fuck you.
There's an 11-year-old child listening to this right now. And his parents,
I'll take him out of the room.
His parents have overheard that bit of it, and they've gone in and they said, Alex Wishart, which is his name, as he wrote in last week, you're no longer allowed to listen to this podcast. Why? Because Danielle Ward couldn't keep her filthy mouth shut.
Marek, what film did you go and see this? Oh, how many Davies would you give?
What's it? Interesting.
Candle Cake.
Candle Cake. Behind the Candle Cake, I would give it 6.5 Davids.
Six and a half Davids.
It's an interesting story, but all it made me want to know is more. I wanted to see a better film about the same man. Do you know what I mean? I found it intriguing, but that's probably mostly his life is intriguing.
Behind the Candelabra 2 might be better then.
Yeah, maybe, but he does die of AIDS at the end.
Oh, spoilers.
Right. Okay.
What did you go see, Mara?
I was on the Isle of Wight, so the Isle of Wight Cineworld hasn't got particularly good choice. I would have liked to have gone to see Behind the Candelabra, but I was only left with one choice, really.
Whistle Down the Wind.
Yes. And that broke halfway through, so I had to go and see After Earth.
Oh! After Earth.
The Will Smith and Jaden Smith sci-fi film.
Marek.
Yeah, but I went with my brother and his stepson, who is 15, so that restricts you as well, especially when you're not wearing any pants and trousers. okay. Anyway.
After Earth, what's it about?
Well, interesting, it's one of those occasions where, and this happens all the time, where two similar films come out at the same time.
It's like Oblivion.
Quite similar.
Right.
I'll tell you what it's about. Will Smith is this sort of aloof space commander who doesn't really engage with his family after the death of his daughter. So he's got a bit of a strained relationship with his son, Kitai, played by Jaden Smith.
Son.
Yeah. So that should be quite easy for them to act that out. The backstory is the human race has been attacked by aliens, and they've sort of, everyone's left Earth, and these aliens could track humans because of the smell of their fear. Imagine that.
Like an owl tracks a mouse through the colour of its urine.
Yeah, well, it's not. I don't think it's urine or excrement based. I think it's just a different sort of pheromone smell.
Oh, right.
Anyway, Will Smith became a big hero because he managed to override the feeling of fear because it's purely psychological.
Of course it is.
Can you imagine that? So the monsters couldn't track him, so he killed lots of these monsters and became this big hero. Anyway, Will Smith comes back from a mission, and his wife says, oh, you should take Jaden Smith along with you on your next trip so you can do a bit of father-son thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no. The blooming spaceship gets into a bit of a problem, doesn't it?
You're joking.
No.
What, the toilet gets bunged up?
Toilet gets bunged up.
And
first of all, they think,
him.
Oh, it's kitchen roll in the toilet roll.
And yeah.
That'll clear itself out. Doesn't that
of
problem
all the missions
it escalates
take your son on
yeah it
oh
escalates I'm not sure I'm just guessing it was
okay,
kitchen
okay,
roll
yeah, right.
Or some sort of bung up in the toilet which made the spaceship crash and everyone died.
Yeah,
so they're left on Earth, but it's an Earth that's evolved into a different Earth where it's really dangerous, and there was one of these monsters that smelt fear on the ship and it's escaped.
Oh, bugger.
Will Smith, well, he'll sort it out, won't we? Won't he? Oh, no, he's not. He's been injured, isn't he? So his son's got to go and find the other half of the ship to get this thing so they can escape.
Does Will Smith die?
It's not about him dying. It's about his relationship with his son.
But he does,
and he can... there's no spoilers. We've got to watch the spoilers. He can monitor, he can see everything his son sees. So he's almost like... Because of these... He's got this...
Clock, watch,
sort of super watch, something
super
like
watch,
that.
Okay.
Yeah. That he can see everything his son sees and see what's going on around at this from the spaceship control center.
How old's his son?
His son is whoever Jaden Smith is, 14,
this
15.
Oh, I wouldn't want to see everything my 14-year-old son sees.
Now this film is this film was directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh,
it was, wasn't
they've
it?
Kept
I
that
remember.
Quiet.
Yes, no, I remember being really surprised because normally he puts his name over everything.
I think it's an incredible term because M. Night Shyamalan people hate because he basically, you must have seen, if you haven't seen, Sixth Sense was good, The Village was quite good, and then it's been a massive falling down to
but
the happening and then The Last Airbender, the worst
The Last
when,
Airbender, yeah.
And The Devil, did you see The Devil? I
was
think
on the lift?
He wrote it, yeah, I don't know if he wrote
I didn't mind that one,
it.
Actually.
It was all right. I mean, it was really obvious what the twist was.
I didn't
Gotta
get
be
it.
Twist. Is there a twist in this?
Not especially.
Is he doesn't have a director, or is he just director?
He's a writer-director. He wrote it with someone else, but there's none of that. He normally puts himself in a cameo, a real self-aggrandizing cameo, when you want to punch him in the face.
Is he the monster?
Well, in real life, probably. So everyone hates... So automatically, as soon as you say M. Night Shyamalan, you just think, everyone gets their knives out.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, isn't it, that like he was at a time a director that could sell a film on his name, and now...
Fall from grace. And now he curses the film. Now he's had
but
to take his name off.
It's not just jealousy of success. He has made everyone hate him through his smuggery and then not producing good films.
Because also, of the cameos,
yeah.
And also, there's a twist. I'm cleverer than you. I've put a twist in this film.
But also, I think there's something about his film was where... He tries to give you a message about the human race and about the sort of... And you think, do you know what? I make my own decisions about the human race, thanks, Shyamalan, whatever
your
name is.
Have you seen The Knowing, the one about the trees? Oh, my gosh.
They should have called it Mark Wahlberg versus Trees.
That is such a brilliant film because of how bad it is.
The Knowing's the Nicolas Cage one, isn't it?
Oh, no,
not
the...
Yeah, not The Knowing.
Not
it's
The Knowing.
The Happening. But it's supposed to, it was supposed to be a B-movie, The Happening. It was supposed to be really happening. Because I remember watching The Happening going, is this real? Am I really watching this film?
Really?
It's
not meant to be a B-movie.
No, because when you watch it, you think Mark Wahlberg isn't that bad.
Yeah.
And yet he's doing one of the worst performances in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
But because it was supposed to be like a B-movie.
It's
definite
as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they're supposed to be acting like that. I know, basically, M. Night Shyamalan... You probably, if you listen to this, you probably think he's a dick as well. We should get back to the film.
Yeah.
Yes, so...
I'm interested now.
So because of the... Sorry, question.
No, go ahead.
Because I knew it was by M. Night Shyamalan, immediately it's a weird thing happened, in which my expectations just dropped by tenfold.
Yeah.
So I just thought, this film is going to be awful. Or it's going to annoy me, or there's going to be him... coming down from the clouds as God telling me how to live my life. None of that really happened, and it's just an average film. Like on IMDb, it's got 4.8, which I think is unnecessarily harsh.
Really?
I give it 6 Marics, but that's really generous because I was expecting. But I think because my expectations were so bad.
Yeah.
It's just the same as Oblivion. I think it's probably suffered in the States as well because they've had far more of the Will and Jaden Smith. Media circus promoting it, where he's just been going on all of these programs with his son because they want to talk to Will Smith, and then he's been pushing his son in front of everybody. That's going, he's a film star too.
I think Jaden, they do a weird thing at the start. Jaden Smith is narrating what's happening.
They do a rap.
They do not do a rap.
It's Carlton from Fresh Prince.
I wish he was. It'd be brilliant if Carlton was in it. Give him a film. I'm not sure I'd watch What Happened to Carlton as Skinner.
Dave's old flatmate is exactly like a white Carlton.
He
it's
is
amazing.
Like a white Carlton. Wow. Which is weird because Carlton's like a white dude. That was the joke. So basically what Danielle's saying is I'm friends with a white man.
Wow. You've got white friends?
Yeah, yeah.
That is so 2013.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this film... I feel Jake. I couldn't work out whether they were trying to put on this weird space future voice, whether it was a mesh of accents, or it was just really bad acting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's annoying sometimes.
Because Jaden Smith at the start of it, I spoke to my nephew and my brother. Went, could you understand what Jaden Smith was actually saying? Surely the opening start of the film, when you're introducing it, doing a narrative thing, you should be able to understand what the main character is saying, and he hasn't. I feel sorry for him because I think he's going to grow up to hate his dad because his dad is... Will Smith's quite good. I think Will Smith is a good actor. I think he's watchable.
Yeah.
And he's charismatic. His son hasn't got that.
But
his son never gets to have sex with Will Smith, which is always going to be the thing that...
What? What are you saying?
What do you mean?
What happened to your... What?
What's going on? I mean...
No, but Will Smith's really attractive and everybody else in the world can potentially have sex with Will Smith for his son.
But Dave's got a flatmate. Other flatmate looks exactly like a white Will Smith.
No, Carlton.
But the other one.
Oh, yeah, that other one, yeah.
So you secretly fancied Dave's old flatmate?
No.
I don't understand what's happening.
Carry on.
You just said that it must be terrible that a son can't have sex with his dad.
Not a son. Being Jaden Smith, you're the only person in the world that doesn't get to fantasize about having sex with
his dad. Tom Cruise won't let himself either.
He's also got two of the children, so they
let him. Yes, true.
What are you saying?
This is getting cut.
No, leave this in. This is the interesting stuff.
I think that it's hard enough being a child star and being liked, but to have to go on a publicity drive with your dad when you're trying to establish yourself as an actor must be really embarrassing.
There was a big thing on British TV you may have seen where Will Smith came on and he sat when he on the Graham Norton show.
Oh yeah, and Carlton came out.
Yeah, previously they did it last time. When Will Smith, it was an impromptu singing of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. They weren't got 6 million hits on YouTube. Yeah. This time, they did it as
and Jazzy Jeff came out, yeah, and they started, all, and then Carlton came out and did a dance.
Oh. It was all staged. It was two staged.
It was.
Yeah. And Jaden Smith hasn't got... I don't even know anything about him. He's like a sort of little robot.
Yeah, dressed up little robot.
A robot Will Smith. Someone sucked out all the personality.
But I think Will Smith sucked out all the personality because I get the feeling he's a really overbearing father and he just doesn't see. You wouldn't have any space to grow into if he was telling you how to be a good person all the time.
He's one of those people who's not those people who are nice all the time.
Yeah,
to everyone. I don't trust those
think
people.
Jaden Smith will become a serial killer.
I think he'll become like turning to Simon Fielder.
I don't know who that is.
He's an obscure British comic who's always nice to everyone. That was just for me and Danielle Redrick.
Well. Is After Earth supposed to be a pun on Afterbirth?
No.
Right.
It's just off. It's just average. It's just the steady decline of M. Night Shyamalan.
I think it sounds like he's had a bit of a rise. Yeah.
No, because apparently there's a website, and I forget what it's called, where that charts Rotten Tomatoes scores, and you can see a graph of people's careers. And M. Night Shyamalan was, I think, almost unique in having such a high one, and then incrementally every single one was lower than the previous one.
Yeah.
Poor M. Night Shyamalan.
He could have been a god if he'd have just walked into a bus as soon as after the premiere of Sixth Sense.
Or he could be completely unknown if he hadn't been lucky early on.
Yeah.
I got the twist in The Sixth Sense after about 40 minutes.
I didn't.
Really?
I did. No, someone really told me about it before I saw it. That was good of them.
If ever no one speaks to a character in a film, I assume they're dead anyway. So
you can't say it now.
Everybody's seen The Sixth Sense.
Not the 11-year-old. It's got to wait another 4 years to watch that.
I have a 5-year spoiler rule. If a film's older than 5 years, you're allowed to talk about how it ends.
Yeah, Marek, we have 8 or 9 other listeners we need to consider as well.
Yeah, over. So we should. If you are a listener and you want to cut, well, we finished that bit of a review now, I suppose, didn't we?
Yeah.
The main thing you want to is now. If you listen, it might already have happened. But Film Fandango Live is on Monday.
Monday night,
the 17th of June.
Monday. Cheese and wine.
You can buy tickets at type the Forge Camden Film Fandango into Google and you can buy tickets. Please buy tickets to it because we might not do another one if you don't come.
Yeah, if we don't sell enough tickets, we probably won't bother.
And it will be your chance to be on the podcast as well.
Yeah, so we will go around and we'll talk to you about what you thought of the film RoboCop and our own films and maybe any films. Go to the cinema this weekend so we don't have to. Also, see a film and then we'll talk about it on Monday with you.
Yeah.
And so next
Jennifer
week,
Jennifer Lawrence might be there.
Jennifer Lawrence will probably
she
be there.
She might be there. She might be there.
You've asked her.
She might be there.
Wow.
I heard Wendy Wason might be there.
Oh, then Jennifer won't come.
Wow. Okay. So, also next week's podcast, we're going to be discussing how we made our films, which you'll see online.
Or you can see them first if you come to the Forge and Foundry.
The premieres of them, providing all the equipment works okay.
Yeah.
And we'll be discussing RoboCop. So you can watch that on Netflix as well if you haven't already seen it.
And I will be dressed like one of the Night's Watch.
From Game of Thrones. Yeah. Are you making TV references again to annoy Marion?
It's like a film. It's like a really long film.
It's called it TV Fandango.
Yeah. TV tap dance.
So instead of challenges,
right?
We've just read letters because there's someone, a letter here asking for recommendations. I mean, do you want to read it? Oh, read it out.
What accent should I do? This is from James Cresswell, who is in the West Midlands. I'm going to do an East Midlands accent. hello, Danielle, David and Marek. I'm currently exploiting the Netflix month free trial to watch the new series of Arrested Development. I'd failed to predict, though, how psychologically overwhelming it would be to have such a massive choice of films available to me for the entirety of June. So, can you recommend me anything that I should definitely watch without question before the month's over? I'd keep the subscription if I had more income, but it's such as Britain and all that. Also, as Twin Peaks is another critically acclaimed American TV series I'm currently watching through, I thought it'd be quite interesting to see what you think of the feature-length prequel Fire Walk With Me, especially as, even by Lynch standards, it has a reputation for being particularly divisive. Thanks for the podcast and for presumably reading this in a funny accent. I'm from the West Midlands, by the way, so there's a wealth of comedy to be mined in true historical Midlands style from that fact, James.
Oh, thanks, James.
What? And that accent.
Marek was amazed by that accent, weren't you?
That's not West Midlands.
No, it's more of a kind of Nottingham Derby sort of accent.
But Midlands is more Birmingham, not that.
I know, I didn't go for that, but I told you before I started I was going to do East Midlands rather than West Midlands.
That sounded like it was Southern.
No, that was more Nottingham Derby.
I didn't even know there are places that are
not. Should we talk about the things James said? I've not seen Twin Peaks. I totally intend to, but I've not seen it. You are a big fan, aren't you, Dan?
I really love Twin Peaks, even though I still am only about halfway through the second series, which is even though it's on like Netflix, I've got the box set and I have to put them into a thing every time I want to watch it. I have to get it out of a box and put it into a machine every time I want to watch it.
When did it come out? Because I remember it was so big when it came out, wasn't it? And I watched a few episodes.
The early 90s. Yeah. So I haven't seen Fire Walk With Me because I don't want to see it until I've seen the whole.
Of course, it's all in one.
That's what happened
narrative.
To, what's her name?
Laura Palmer.
Laura Palmer. That tells you that conclusion, is it?
I think the conclusion is in the series. I don't like. I don't like. See if I say I don't.
I've not
know.
Seen any of it, so I don't want to.
Yeah, don't send us emails telling us who killed her. So.
Recommendations from Netflix.
Anyway, yes. Back to the original question.
Yes, I've got a lot here.
Have you?
Yes.
You've been looking through the catalogue.
You can have a look through it while I quickly say mine, if you like.
Yeah.
There are loads of good films on Netflix. Here are Marek's recommendations. That's me. Headhunters by Joe Nesbo.
Fantastic film.
The Baader-Meinhof Complex.
Not
about,
seen it.
About a terrorist group in Germany. It's brilliant. We watched it. We covered it before the conversation. We're Francis Ford Coppola's less lauded masterpiece.
The Raid is on there now.
Okay.
And
fairly
Drive.
Recently. It's yes, and Drive.
Both
on there.
Those are Drive. I also one of my favourite old films, In the Heat of the Night with Sidney Poitier. Is one of the greatest detective films ever.
Oh, I love a detective film.
With Rod Steiger, I think it's Roy Steiger or something. Who gets an Oscar in the supporting role, I think, as a police officer. It's brilliant. Downfall, where about Hitler's actor.
He's
an amazing actor
amazing,
who plays probably the best portrayal of Hitler ever. Black Book, which is a really good war film. Glengarry Glen Ross, an acting masterpiece. And comedies, 21 Jump Street and The Other Guys on there. And documentaries, you can't go wrong with American Movie.
Oh, brilliant. American
One of
movie.
My absolute favourite all-time films ever is on Netflix, which is Midnight Cowboy, which I adore. I think it's one of the most beautiful films ever made. Yep, The Raid and Driver on there. You've just taken it off me while I was having a look. So
oh, dear.
We could remember three things.
No, this is the generation game.
I was coming to Danielle and David looking on the internet now. And
no.
A bit of an argument.
Yes. A film that I think is really good, even though it's got Gwyneth Paltrow in it, is The Talented Mr. Ripley.
I like Gwyneth Paltrow.
I like To Be a Friend in Real Life. I think she'd be.
I think she probably cooks good food.
She's got a cookbook, isn't she?
Oh, has she?
She doesn't do gluten.
I didn't wish to plug that. She doesn't do gluten.
No, not really.
Desperado's on there. Desperado is fun.
There's loads of great loads films. Of stuff.
We're not paid by them or anything. We just think, you know.
That's the great thing. Just start watching. Just
start watching stuff.
There's take a gamble on something.
Yeah, and then, in fact, take a gamble on something and tell us to watch it. It's probably good. We've got more letters here. This one is from Tom Mould, who is originally from Suffolk but now resides in East London. So I will do him as South African.
Don't you do everyone as South African?
It's one of the accents. Fine, I won't do him as South African.
No, go on, I like it.
I'll do him as a pirate. Which would you prefer?
South African pirate.
South African pirate. Daniel, David, medic and buddy. All right? I've been catching up on past podcasts, that's quite hard to say, of late, and just wanted to congratulate Merrick on his Norfolk accent from a few weeks back.
Thank you very much.
It was spot on, and reminded me of the instructor at the Swaffham paintball venue. Anyway, the main point of this email was to say that I really appreciate you guys covering European films, both as new releases and retrospectively. I wanted to suggest that you should also look to countries that aren't renowned or prominent. For example, France, Spain, Scandinavian countries.
Maybe they're the ones that you're saying look beyond France, Spain and the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, those are more prominent, aren't they?
Yeah.
So we should look for some Austrian cinema or maybe Latvian.
There's a good Russian film called Kolya, K-O-L-Y-A, which won the best... won an Oscar for Best Foreign Film a few years ago. You should watch that. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I wanted to suggest two titles that I greatly enjoyed. Bullhead, 2011, from Belgium/Netherlands. And Breathing, 2011, from Austria. Both are great examples of feature directorial debuts. If you do get around to watching them, I hope you enjoy them as much as I did. Keep up the good work, guys. Best, Tom Bolt. P.S. Following on from my previous tweet, I wanted to reiterate that Buddy is still my favourite character. Thanks, boy.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, but the actor who plays him's a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan plays Buddy in this podcast.
He does. And he drinks water loud.
I've got a short letter from Brendan Stevens from Hereford. What's Hereford's quite sort of below the surface?
Kind of, it's a bit Walesy, a bit Bristol-y.
Bristol's like that, isn't it?
Bristol Wales.
Hoi Daniel Merrick, spelt my name wrong. And David. My film suggestion of the week, 21st Furniture, written and directed by Lena Burnham, with real life mother and sister playing the same roles in the movie. And you can tell, top performances. You can rent it on Blinkbox, no advertising. You can rent it on unnamed website.
After we've talked about Netflix from 10 minutes.
For £2.49. Good example of rambling US indie comedy drama rather than that totals along nicely. Cheers, Brendan from Hereford. Freelance graphic designer.
We've seen Tiny Furniture.
Yeah, it's good.
I think I recommended it. Yeah, it was the one that led to the TV show Girls.
It's a really good film.
They filmed it all on a Canon 7D. Low budget. I'm really fascinated by this. Probably everyone else is bored by it. You're bored by it, well, I'm bored by you. Thank you a lot.
Well, thank you for your letters. If you'd like to get in touch, then do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com.
Or, even better, write it on a piece of paper and come and bring it to us at the Forge and Foundry on Monday, 17th of June, and hand it over to us.
There'll be tickets on the door, so if you don't internet, then how are you listening to this? But if you don't internet, just come on down. You'll be more than welcome. Have a drink with us.
But not on us.
Not on us, no.
Yeah, but near us.
Near us. Yes. Or if you're lazy, just leave a message on our Facebook wall if you want to get in touch. Facebook.com/filmfandango.
Yeah, just take, and don't give anything back for all the work we put in.
Yeah, if you'd like to do that, then you can also tweet us at filmfandango. So
we had to watch a film this week.
We did have to watch a film this week. Who recommended this film?
It was Fabrice Ferrero, the French
Fabrice.
Guy.
Fabrice.
Oh, hello.
Of course, Fabrice.
It was me.
Fabrice. We watched a film called Primer. Now, who would like to explain the plot?
I had to write it down too.
There are some guys, they find out that they can travel through time.
Okay, don't jump ahead. That's sort of it, but the bit we can actually explain is there are some guys who sort of extracurricular from their work are doing R&D in a garage. There's four guys who are trying to find a way of reducing the weight of computer components so they'll run faster. And inadvertently, they discover a strange form of time travel.
Which is the time travel between two points.
A and B.
You can only travel between these two points, but the something about how long you're in a box.
Yeah, it's possibly the most difficult film to follow. Here's my argument for this film. It's a low-budget film that was made in 2004 but by writer, director, producer, actor.
Star, did the music, did the editing.
For $7,000.
Yeah.
That is incredible. I think that's an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
And it got really big because I would argue this is not a one. It's not a one-sitting film. So you see it and think, oh, 79 minutes is quite a short film.
Yeah.
You can't possibly understand it, 79 minutes. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
No.
Because what you're seeing is you need to watch it two or three times to understand it or read about it. So you watch it once, you go, because what you're seeing is after the time travel has taken place, the last... you're seeing the last record after like maybe three or four different time travel people.
Yes.
People have come back in time and changed things again. You're seeing the last record of that. So in order to understand that, you need to watch the film and watch it again. So I think it's impossible to review on one sitting.
One reviewer said anyone who claims to understand what's going on in Primer after one sitting is either a savant or a liar.
Now, I would say that I'm not an idiot. I've studied physics. I studied mathematics at university. And I found this film dull. I did not enjoy it. I sat through it. And I don't mind watching a film I don't completely understand. I don't mind an author that's trying to do something interesting and original. Equally, I don't mind... I don't dislike a film because I don't understand it either. I dislike this film because I thought it was a really complicated idea thrown at a screen and really badly plotted as a piece of cinema.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the clever, you know, thing that might excite a mathematician on paper, you know, the idea of if I do plot all of this out as if it was real life and then mix it all up so that it is a puzzle but it does actually make sense, is that actually entertaining for an audience? I would say no. I didn't find it entertaining. My brother watched this with us and we found it quite funny, the idea that you invent time travel and you do things as boring as these people do with the invention of time travel. They are the most tedious people you could ever meet. They don't emotionally react to anything that happens at all. At any point, they just sort of babble on inanely about everything.
See, I'm sort of going to play the opposite to what you thought, because the tone of it is unlike any other film, because you're so used to being almost spoon-fed films, just spoon-fed the plot. This doesn't tell you that this is an important bit.
No.
And there's bits, because you're watching a film that's been changing time, so there are allusions to what might have happened, i.e. I won't do a spoiler, but at the party, something big happened that has been changed, and they don't tell you what the big moments are. You have to sort of pick up on them. And everything's at the same level of tone.
Yes.
Whether it's because they are not Hollywood actors, but I quite enjoyed the fact it's just it's like what a detective puzzle that you have to watch two or three times, and it's not the conventional way of watching a film. It's a completely different way of watching a film. You just sit, watch the film, go, right, I half understand that.
Oh, I
read
think,
something on the internet,
yeah,
and then go
I
back.
I concede it's a noble experiment. I didn't enjoy their results.
But I don't think I'm in a position to judge this film until I've watched it two or three times and I sort of worked out. And I was quite, I think, well, good for you. You're doing something different with film.
Yeah.
And a low budget. We're judging this against big Hollywood blockbusters, you know, and all the films this is like a bloke's made this himself on a camera, literally a cheap camera he's hired for £5,000. And it's interesting. And people are still talking about it today, 9 years later, this low budget film. It's become a cult film. So I think you've got to applaud that.
Sure, I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's you know, I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. I did not enjoy the experience of having to sit there for what felt like 3 hours.
It feels so long. That's the thing, I don't...
We didn't know anything about the characters. We didn't... Because they're not emotionally reacting to anything, you're right, it probably makes logical sense that all of the... They emotionally react in large ways to the things that go wrong. So when they've gone back and changed them again, they're now being methodical and precise in the exact same way they approach their work. But that means you never get to see them be different. And so you don't know how they feel about anything. They only seem to just get a bit tired. That's really watching, the entire journey of the characters is they get tired.
When you're watching something, you don't know, you think this scene's a bit weird.
Yeah,
because you don't know what about that this character's from something that's about to happen in the future. So it just feels like you're watching a weird scene.
They never changed clothes, or which makes it even harder. Like just any signifiers that wouldn't belittle it. They wouldn't spoon feed you it at all. It was just like it's just sort of interminable. It doesn't feel like it's under 90 minutes at all. You know, it drags like crazy.
It really...
I mean, I find the early scenes dull before the time travel even exists.
I think the first, it goes on for... But it feels completely different to anything I've seen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. I think, you know, it's... If you want to see something you haven't seen, then undeniably, you know, sit down, stick it on.
Yeah, it really... But the thing is, while I completely take your point that it's a film that needs to be watched more than once, it probably does... But I have no desire to watch it again. Like, I don't care about it enough to want to. It's not like, it's not even like Memento that, you know, once you finish, you think, oh, wow, you want to watch it again because you want to know what you've missed. Fan of Primer, I don't want to revisit it. And that, if I've not got a complete experience from the film and I don't want to watch it again, surely that's a bit of a fail.
Yeah, I didn't even understand the basic time travelling concept, if I'm honest. I couldn't get my head around the whole, you know, 6 hour thing, and I couldn't even work that out. So stuff was happening.
You were looking this up, weren't you? The guy who wrote it was also a script editor, or he helped out the script of Looper.
He was thanked in Looper. That's all it was. They thanked him in the credits of Looper.
And one of the problems I had with Looper was I think it gets too bogged down with its own physics. And sometimes you want to go, look, we've already taken the leap of faith that you can travel through time. You do not have to explain to me why this is theoretically possible.
Can't you just do Back to the Future?
I mean, and again, not for dumb reasons, but it takes... If they'd made great characters and it was interesting and I wanted to know more about it and you give me all of this amazing physics stuff, that's great. But I sort of felt that there's too much physics and mathematics and not enough heart.
For me, it was... It's so claustrophobic what they create with this, that if you're creating a claustrophobic film, it has to be a character piece. And I thought they were carbon copies of one another, and they were both boring people. And I thought that was its biggest crime. It's quite possible that this structure would have been fascinating if we were watching two people we could engage with. But I just really I don't think that's the actor's fault. I think it's the writer, director, actor. Choreographer
King.
Do you think it added to the realism though? For me, it made it seem like it almost.
Sure,
like
it was as real as watching boring people talk after work. Like I don't go to films for, you know, pure realism. What's the point? I don't see the point of doing that. Like they invent time travel, and all they can think to do is safely play the stock market so they don't change anything, so they can make some money. Then they don't spend any of that money. They don't do anything with it. And then one of them has a slight flight of fancy as he gets out of control that he might punch his boss and then undo it so he didn't. And that's as dangerous as they get. And I'm just like, this is dull.
There's that big thing when you find out. I don't know. My jury's still out on this film. I can't even give it a mark.
Right.
Because I don't think it's fair to give it a mark. Because I don't think it's like watching half a film watching it once, probably.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't give it a mark, because to rate it against proper budgeted professional films is not right. It's not right because this is a home project.
No, but even you have to be able to judge it on one sitting.
Yeah.
I don't think it's meant for that. It's almost meant for... It's meant for two sittings.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? To be able to review it properly, I think.
I don't want to have to do that again.
I'm going to force you to.
Oh, I'm not watching it again. Life's too short, Marek.
Life's too short.
He's made another film. There's a tweet here from...
The other film was meant to be brilliant, isn't it?
Neil Bastardo at Colonel Witch, who says, haven't seen Primer, but have seen Shane Carruth's follow-up Upstream Colour, which was brilliant. Keep an eye out for it. It's not out yet. I think the festival was out in the cinema. But he filmed that on a Panasonic GH2, which cost about £500.
Wow.
So he's quite an indie filmmaker.
Yeah.
I absolutely applaud the fact, and I think it's good that I'm glad I've seen it, but I don't want to watch it again.
I think it shows there's a real dearth in intellectual films, you know, that because that's still, there aren't that many sort of clever, like Memento, not many puzzling films around, are there?
Oh, I don't know, I think there are, and I think it's...
Like what?
I think to go, well, exactly, like now it sounds like you're saying... Oh, you didn't like Primer because you didn't get it.
I'm not saying that.
I did get it. I didn't like it.
I think, you know, I don't know. For me, films are a storytelling medium. And I didn't think the story was well told in this. I thought it was just handing you the pieces and going, you sort it out.
If you go back in time, would you still watch it?
Yes, because otherwise my ear will start bleeding for some reason that doesn't come to anything.
Yeah, but I'd make sure I had more peanut M&Ms. More peanut M&Ms! Mm. Not a yog this time.
No yog.
Tried making a homemade yog, but it didn't work.
No yog for you. Well, that was Primer.
And that was the podcast.
That was the podcast. On this, the last podcast before the live show on June the 17th. Woo! So we hope to see you there. We're very excited. Our films will be finished, fingers crossed, and we will buy some cheese. We'll probably be drunk already by the time you arrive, right, guys?
I am going to be absolutely wankered.
I'm going to start now.
Well, we'll be back next week with more films. So in the meantime, keep watching the films. Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.